to order, and for the record, let it show that this is a joint HESS committee meeting, and also we have with us the Special Committee on Education. And so let it, for the record, we will be starting at 4 minutes after 3 on January 28th, 2003. Let the record reflect that members of both committees who are present are Education Chairman, Representative Gatto, Representatives Wolf, Seaton, and myself, Wilson, and House HESS Committee members, that's ones that are on both committees. The ones that are HESS committee members are Representative Sitna, and Education members are Representative Coghill and Representative Guerra.
Yeah.
And Representative Representative Hines just walked in, and I had a call from another representative. Representative Holmes is here. Anybody else? If I miss anybody, please make sure that you are duly noted. I don't recognize everyone yet because there's so many new faces. I would also like to take this opportunity to introduce my HESS aide, Jean Ellis. Jean, would you like to stand? Jean will be my right hand during these meetings, and so want to make sure she's well noted. And also the recording secretary over in the corner is Bonnie Gruen. And so since this is our first meeting, I'd kind of like to do a little housekeeping before we get down to real business. Just a little bit of the guidelines of how I'm going to run the meetings and what is expected. And first of all, let me get to my notes here to make sure I get everything. The order of business that I will usually follow when we have a regular meeting is that I'll have the bill sponsor give an introduction to the legislation, and then we will respond to questions from the committee members and from the audience. And a proper protocol for asking questions would be through the committee chair, because Bonnie over there in the corner is going to be transcribing all of this, and she's going to want to know who we are. So if you ask your questions through me, I will respond to you by using your name, and that way she knows who's talking, and that whether we're asking questions here or whether the presenters, they will also ask questions and do the presenting through me. And that's just so that she can do the transcribing and know who's talking. A person from administration will always be able to give their position on what's going on, and we will respond with questions to them. Then there will be public testimony, and during the public testimony, we want to make sure that everyone is treated with respect, and we aren't going to raise our voices or anything like that. You will get tapped out if that happens. And also, we get paid to be here. The administrators or the department heads get paid to be here, but the people that are in the LIOs and out in Alaska land, they're the ones that are taking time off from their jobs many times, and so I will try very hard to make sure that they get their questions asked and that we do listen to them. So, I will hope that it's confrontational, and at times it does get to, especially the people that are calling in, sometimes they get very emotional, and so we want to try to keep things at an even keel and listen, make sure that everybody is treated with respect. The committee will discuss the legislation among ourselves and decide what we're going to do, and it's actually our job to look at any bill that we're being presented with. Sometimes we might just turn it right inside out, pick it apart, see what works, see what doesn't, because we don't want to take it to the floor with flaws in it. So it's our duty. Don't be afraid to ask questions. And sometimes you want to ask a question when you already know the answer, but you just want to get it on the record. So don't be afraid to ask questions. I will try, because of time constraints, I will try to make sure that everybody gets a say, but we want everybody to that to happen. So If you've raised your hand three times but somebody else hasn't had a chance to speak yet, I will probably go on down the line and make sure everybody gets recognized before I come back to someone that's already spoke. So that's kind of the way I'm going to try to conduct the committee meeting. There will be votes on whether to move a bill from the committee, and if the chair has decided to hold the legislation in committee, I will let you know ahead of time that there will be times that I don't think it's ready to pass the legislation out of committee, but we need to hear it, discuss it, and then maybe take it back and work on it some more. But so there will be times when we will actually not vote on it, but I'll let you know ahead of time. If I can, I will do that. And whenever the anything is out and we have voted on it and it's passed out, make sure you don't leave this room until you've signed the committee recommendation sheet for that bill. So that's a no-no if you leave the room without doing that. We have binders. These will be taken to your office and with the information in it so that you have time to study it. I will try to let you know a week ahead of time of the bills that are coming up so that you have time to study them before we get to them. But you will have backup information from the binders. And my committee aide has taken them to your offices. So most of you have them already. And things are kind of hectic this first week, so we're going to all kind of have to just get by with and see what's going to happen. I do expect the meetings to start on time, if possible. We can't start on time if we don't have a quorum, so I hope that you can all be here and be on time. Meetings are currently scheduled on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays, and we will have some Saturday meetings, especially if there's hearings. I do want to check with you, because if we can start an hour earlier, we kind of were trying to figure that out, and as far as I know, there's no person that has a problem with starting an hour earlier or something that's running and that's going to be a problem. So if there is, let me know before the next meeting. Otherwise, if I don't hear from you, the next meeting will start from 2 to 4 instead of 3 to 5. And if you're going to be late or absent, please let me know ahead of time so that we can make sure that it's announced for the record. People that run against you in the next campaign have a tendency, if you don't attend meetings, to let the world know about that. So it's for your own benefit and for the benefit of our constituents that we attend the meetings and that we do take part. The microphones on the table here serve three purposes. And first of all, the secretary transcribes the notes from what she hears on these microphones. Also, the public at the LIOs hear from these microphones. And finally, the gavel to gavel is taken from these microphones. But they're highly sensitive, so don't tap a pencil or rustle any more papers than you have to, because it does pass on. And I guess I'm looking, brief at East June, we're going to have to explain this to me. And we're back. Oh, back on. And Representative Holmes is in the. Okay. Okay. He's here momentarily, I guess. So now, I think I've gone over most of the things that I wanted to give you, some kind of the rules before we get started. But now we do have our Ed McLean, who is Deputy Commissioner of Education. Oh, and I missed a couple other ones. Representative Kapsner. She's not here, but I didn't see her.
Deputy is where?
She's at another meeting.
Okay.
Who's the deputy?
Ed McLean is our Deputy Commissioner of Education, and Kevin Sweeney is here also. But I'll have Ed, why don't you come up? He's going to give us an overview of No Child Left Behind. And I don't know how many of you have even heard of No Child Left Behind, but it is a big federal program that Alaska is going to be working into our school systems. And so it's a very comprehensive federal legislation. And I look at today as this is a No Child Left Behind 101. And we will have another meeting on this a little bit later. Representative Sitna?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Is it okay for us to ask questions at any time in this?
You know, I asked Mr. McLean about that a little earlier, and he said that he's going to stop at certain points and let us ask questions. But this is pretty intense, and I think if we just listen kind of the first time, and by the next meeting we'll have kind of a little groundwork to ask more questions at the next meeting. And as we go along, lots of times he's going to be answering the questions that are in our heads as he goes along. So Ed, I'm just going to turn it over to you and let you start out.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. For the record, Ed McLean, Deputy Commissioner for our Education and Early Development, State of Alaska. I have with me today members of my staff that have been working on No Child Left Behind, that federal legislation, and I'll be having them come up and work with me during the presentation. During the first part, Mr. Mark Leal is our Director of Assessment, about the first 20 slides, and then the second part, I'll have Mr. Eric Mattson. Eric, where are you? I'll have Eric Mattson with me for the second part. He's our overall NCLB, No Child Left Behind, person for highly qualified staff, supplemental services, school improvement plans, and such like that. And then the other person that has been really helpful in this piece and that a lot of you will have contact with, I imagine, is Mr. Kevin Sweeney. He's our legislative liaison for education. In your packet, trying to anticipate the sort of stuff that you might need for a first look at No Child Left Behind, I've placed small versions of the presentation I'm going to take you through today. But there's also a series of papers that I just basically want to go through with you so that you know where they are. I'll be speaking about them, at least by reference. And so just very quickly, you'll see there's a letter from our commissioner to Secretary Page, June 5th, in which she lays out some of the particular issues that we have with No Child Left Behind. Again, as Representative Sisna asked, I'll be addressing some of these as we go through. And if you have further questions as I break off for each of these points, I'd be happy to try to answer those. But there were various points, as you'll hear during our presentation today, of areas that are specific challenges to Alaska. And this letter was our first memo, if you will, formal note to the federal offices that we had some concerns. In November 1, we followed that up with a little bit more of a detailed, we call it flex points, requested by Alaska, flexibility that we were asking, particular areas, a little bit more of a detail. And then the next in that package is an outline that was used by the commissioner and the governor and chief of staff on their latest visit to Department of Education, Secretary of Education Page, and education advisor to the president, Margaret Spelling. And that's the one that's listed discussion points on No Child Left Behind. And it's a text that I think lays out very nicely some of the particular challenges, the context of Alaska, and talks with some more specificity, not only about some of our issues, but some of the requests and proposed solutions that we had. And again, this will make more sense as we go through, but you'll want this for your later reading. There's also in your packet then what we refer to as the No Child Left Behind discussion point matrix, and that's a summary, if you will, of the items that went before. We had a request from a member of the House for background on the financial aspects, and so we've tried to put some finance information for you from the feds. There's a sheet that lists out the various funding allocations that we receive. When you see IASA, Improving America School Act, that's the old name for No Child Left Behind. One of my first slides, I'll talk about the ten names. It's a bill with many titles. No Child Left Behind, ESEA, Elementary Secondary Education Act, is the same thing as NCLB, and it used to be called Improving America School Act. So we've tried to list out what those fundings were like in 2001, 2002, 2003, because one of the things you will hear is about the money that's being provided by the feds to make this bill doable, and so we've tried to provide that to you in a across-the-form multi-table format. There's a description of what those bills mean, a little bit more detail, just the subparts, glossary of terms, because as you pointed out, in education we like our jargon. I will do my best to keep away from it, but it's kind of hard, so I apologize in advance, and if I do slip, please don't hesitate to call me on it. But there's our EED, Department of Education Early Development, ESL, English Second Language, etc. Whenever you're reading the education items from the feds or from the state, you'll see this kind of language, and I think this will be a helpful sheet for you in any of your work in those areas. And then there is a there was a specific about the new money that was added for No Child Left Behind this year compared to last year. And so we tried to give you all a breakdown, a comparison table, federal education funding, not just the name of the bill, but a little bit about what it's about, what it addresses. And so you'll see what we received last year and what we're receiving this year under No Child Left Behind. And on the second page, you can see that basically we're talking, when all is said and done, while some programs got more and some got less and some was reallocated, there was about $22,700,000 of additional funding provided under No Child Left Behind. It's distributed in a variety of grant programs. So that's your background information, and hopefully you will find that of good use as we go through the presentation. And as you look at this.
Excuse me, before you go on further, I want to be recognized that Representative Kapsner has joined us. And also, if anybody in the audience has their cell phones turned on, would you please turn them off so that we won't be interrupted? Thank you. Go ahead, Ed.
Thank you, Chair. Are there questions on the handouts that I provided before I go into the main presentation? Okay. If you'll turn to your sheets, and there's a little bit of space for some notes. NCLB is a very large bill. It's 1,200 pages. Very few people, I think, have actually read them all. I think Mark and Eric and Sheila Box are probably three that have, and perhaps some others. It's got nine different names. It's a very large price tag for the federal government, $26 billion, and it encompasses 10 different title programs, 10 different aspects of education. The current name is No Child Left Behind, or NCLB. It is the Reauthorized Elementary and Secondary Act, or ESEA. Its goal is to provide all children a fair, equal, and significant opportunity to obtain a high-quality education. It's a goal that I don't think anybody would argue with. It ties in for us, but it also ties in with the nation. And so first, to give you the national roots, 1984, the Carnegie Report suggested there were problems in public and higher education. They began a school effectiveness movement. that evolved into discussion about standards and outcomes in the lower 48. Reauthorization of IDEA, that's the Individuals with Disability Education Act, or the Special Education Bill, and that's another big chunk. IDEA, or Individual Education, Individualized Education, and ESEA have a lot in common. They'll be bringing themselves further together. Goals 2000 movement, you remember the issue started with President Bush, continued on with Clinton, and now with President Bush. Reauthorized ESEA is a outgrowth of that. No Child Left Behind, the year 2001, signed in 2002. Alaska's reform effort, we began in the 90s to establish standards in various content areas. Those of you that were involved with the schools back then will hopefully remember those efforts. We developed content standards, talking about what do kids need to know and be able to do in different content areas, language arts, math, social studies, science. The legislature and the governor's office both continued that effort in various names. We developed a series of performance standards, a little bit more detailed picture of what kids should know and be able to do, to what extent or to how well, to what does that look like. It's one thing to say all kids should be able to add, subtract, multiply, and divide, but to what degree and what type? Those are the performance questions that got added. The legislature added in some accountability with the high school qualifying exam. The governor added some pieces with grade level assessments for school accountability, school identification. Those were pieces that were looked at last year, and you'll see they encompass a lot of the same initiatives with NCLB this year. Both the quality school efforts in the state, as well as No Child Left Behind, maintain a focus on improving schools. The No Child Left Behind really moves that focus or enhances that, looking at individual kids' performance. There's an aspect of No Child Left Behind that was a very big piece for the lower 48. It was the disaggregation of data. You'll hear me talk about that a little later on. The separating out of student achievement scores by groups. We had started that the year before No Child Left Behind through our own Quality Schools initiative, Quality Schools improvement efforts. So in some regards, we were one step ahead. No Child Left Behind targets high poverty schools. It's an outgrowth of what we call in education Title I. Title I is a subsection of ESEA, a subsection of No Child Left Behind, that basically puts additional resources, targets them to schools that have high numbers of disadvantaged kids and underachieving kids. And so you hear people talk about Title I, and Title I is that part of now No Child Left Behind. It's continued, it's a very strong piece of the No Child Left Behind piece of the No Child Left Behind effort. They're looking at high quality assessments. I'm on slide number 6. High quality assessments, aligned curriculum instruction, increased accountability, increased parental involvement, and focused teacher preparation and training. And again, we were lucky here in the state because those were very consistent with the efforts that we had underway with the Quality Schools Initiative and the local Alaska 2000 and standards movement. Both focus on meeting the needs of low-achieving children. Slide 7 basically continues that, just gives you some additional pieces about No Child Left Behind, and there is here one highlight that I do want to make you aware of. The 100% students proficient by 2014, No Child Left Behind and Quality School both have focused on raising student achievement. What and of specifically of targeting, looking at the achievement of each group of kids, subdivided by ethnic, subdivided by spec ed, and by poverty and disadvantagement. But what No Child Left Behind does, that third bullet on slide 7, by 2014, the goal is that all kids be 100% proficient. States define what proficient looks like, what that means. But then whatever that means, schools in the state are required to have that as a goal. There can be some flexibility as to what kind of stair-stepping we do to get there, but they have to have whatever those stair-steps are, they have to have those stair-steps done so that by 2014 we're at 100%. And as we get into some of the nuts and bolts of this, and as you discuss with Mr. Meyer on Thursday, Mr. Meyer is the representative from the federal that will be coming to talk with you. This will be an issue that is of specific importance, specific interest to us as well as to the other states. Both the Quality Schools Initiative and the No Child Left Behind place a premium on highly qualified teachers and staff. No Child Left Behind really goes very far in detailing the specifics of what it means to be highly qualified. Generally, certification or endorsement has been an area that's been under state control. It's been a state decision to decide. And so in our state, for instance, we had said that to be endorsed, you needed to have a major or a minor. The feds are now saying it's a major or it's a graduate degree, or it's passing this demonstrating your proficiency in some sort of a test. And again, we'll get some details. But that has traditionally been a state role to make that determination, to make that definition. This is a new step now for the feds to be getting that specific with not only the goal, but with the how to measure it. Parent and community involvement, both the No Child Left Behind and Quality School have parental involvement and community involvement, really a strong pieces. In this case, the No Child Left Behind gets very specific as to what happens when a school is not making adequate gains and adequate progress, and we'll get to a definition of what that is. But No Child Left Behind gives specific rights to parents, both in turn, and gives them access to what are called supplemental providers in very specific ways. That is a new outreach and a new set of rights and obligations. But again, they are built on the same basic standard of same basic platform of standards for all kids. The next slide, 8, just was my reminder. We have been in conversation with the federal government, the commissioner's office, and my office, Mr. Leal's office, Eric's, and his people. So at varying levels, trying to work out some of the nuts and bolts. With this presentation that I have for you today, one of our big questions we had in preparing for this was when to get down to detail and when to try to hit. We have an hour and a half, and so there is a lot of discussion that's gone on with staff in Washington and in Juneau. I'd be happy to go into those as we get to them, but the letters that I've given hopefully will give you some more than just feel, give you some real detail about what are some of those negotiating points or what are some of those challenge points and what are some of our proposed solutions. But I wanted to give you a sense of this is something that has been a big part of our department's life the last 6 months or so. And we do think we've got some answers for the feds, but we do think in some places that as well-intended as they are, the context that NCLB was developed in, the things they envisioned, were not what we have in a large parts of our state. And so the issue is how do you make those two come together? There will be a big role on slide 9 for the state board and for the legislators, for the public, because this is a new level of state involvement. It's also because this is a new level of federal involvement. It will also mean a new level of state involvement. Our state has traditionally been in that continuum of local control and state control. We've been very much of a local control state, and NCLB now begins to question some of that. There will be places as we move into the accountability scheme where the department is charged by federal law to begin to do monitoring and to make judgment calls, to do approvals that we've not done, and we'll be doing regulation pieces, regulation changes with the Board of Ed, and we'll be coming to you during this session with some statutory revisions. One area, as an example, without going into the detail of it right now, but one of the areas is on the NCLB speaks to No Child Left Behind speaks to districts that are in need of improvement, not just school sites. And we've not generally had seen ourselves as having that kind of an authority to look at sanctions and oversight for what districts do.
Can you elaborate on that, Madam Chair? Can he elaborate on that?
Representative Kapsner, I don't think you were in here when we talked about it, but he's going to stop and have a lull pretty soon, and then we'll go back.
This is that was my first part.
Okay, so you're at that part? Okay,
timing.
Representative Kapsner, you can ask your question.
Thank you. I just wondered if you could elaborate on that. What kind of changes and which districts would be targeted?
I'm not really prepared to speak to which districts would be targeted, except to say that through the chair, Representative Kapsner, the No Child Left Behind lays out specific criteria for when a school site fails to make what it calls adequate yearly progress. And it's based on measures of student achievement, and they're fairly exacting. When a school misses that, then there's a process of identification that involves the state and the district. That school looks at the results, the district looks at the results, and the district works with that school in coming up with some proposed modifications, changes in their programming, in what they might do and how they might address whatever would be those achievement, underachievement that was there, to raise those scores up. If a district, though, not just individual sites, but if a district as a whole, looking at its results, doesn't make adequate yearly progress, and again, it's a measure of student achievement. It's also a measure of student participation and a measure of graduation rate, another indicator that we'll get into when we go to the detail of it. Then the No Child Left Behind speaks in the process of a district being identified as in need of improvement. And that's simply the piece that we have not dealt with here. Our quality school initiative, our quality school plan, our school designator law spoke to schools being designated, but we never spoke in our state law about districts being so designated. And so in some regards, it's a logical next step, but as we get into this, it's not just enough for us to say, for the Fed law to say that this is what you got to do. We need to bring, either by our regulation, and in some cases with your statutory authority, need to look to see that we're not in conflict and that we've got the regulatory authority to do what that national bill is asking us to do. If I don't know how much more detail you might want me to get into now, we'll be having, before we come to you with anything, I can guarantee we'll be presenting those as specific topics.
Okay, I won't ask my questions now.
It is a case, though, the point that you bring up is one, I think, raises it, one of the times we were with the feds, and the question was asked, what happens when the federal law and the state law differ? And the answer that we received was the state law will need to change. I suspect that answer needs to be at least looked at a little bit. And that's a piece that would make me get nervous, and you could see the people in the audience were not real comfortable with it. So we will be back to you with exactly those kind of details. There's a variety of details. I understand, I think, where you're going, Representative Kapsner, and I want to say that we'll be looking at this one very, very carefully, and part of the reason for bringing some of this stuff back for statute is exactly to have that kind of public debate, because we do think this is a new, when I said that No Child Left Behind speaks to opportunity and education for all kids, it also places the federal government in a very new role and relationship with us. So thank you. Are there other questions on this relationship?
There are several, but I just want to make it clear that we will take as much time as it takes for our committee to get familiar and to understand everything that's going on. Right now, we're just going to kind of get it in our heads, because there's a lot to this. There is a very, very, a lot of details that it's going to take us a while to get a handle on. So I think Representative Gatto, you were next.
Yeah. I'm going to guess that it's safe to say that we've always considered our schools to be our community schools, my school, my kid's school, and that now that the federal hands are stretching very much right into the community and right into the schools. And I have this feeling, and I think it's probably right, that the federal impact on this is going to mean that we now have schools that are really controlled from D.C. and not from Juneau. Is that fair to say?
Through the chair, I don't know that I would say that the schools are going to be controlled by the by D.C., but I think it is very safe to say that part of the intent would be that there be much more influence in a more direct kind of a fashion. When that turns into their controlling it is something that I think will come out as we get into the detail, and I think that I would be trying to keep this as much in our control as possible, and we'll get to some of those issues about where the areas of agreement and potential disagreement might be as we go through the report. But your caution is one, your perspective is one that's held by others.
If you follow the money, we're talking a serious amount of money here, and they're not going to simply distribute the money without control. So that's my concern. But I had a different question, and that is that scares me when you mention 100% proficient. I don't think that's achievable at any cost. Is that what they expect from us?
That is what the goal is. And as we go into the detail of the disaggregation, I think, again, I'm sorry, through the chair, Representative Gatto, I think you will see as we go through the detail of how it's to be measured. There are some that have looked at this and said there are a variety of areas where they're noble goals, but people have asked that is that doable? It is a part of the debate that we'll be having, and it's a question that I would urge you to engage Ken Meyer when he is here with you this Thursday.
Representative Gere.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I may ask the Commissioner two questions. First, you had mentioned that the Title I program will remain in effect, though enhanced. And the one question I have that relates to Title I is that in my district, for example, in many districts throughout the state, we have Title I classes that enable lower-income school districts to provide small class sizes to children, class sizes of 18 and less. And the first question is that program going to be disturbed at all? Is it going to be enhanced at all? The second question is different, and that is, as to the new No Child Left Behind programs that the state's going to be required to establish that are currently funded through federal grant money, is it envisioned that the additional federal grant money to cover those new programs will continue to be appropriated, or at some point is the state going to be responsible for funding the federal mandate?
Thank you, through the chair, Representative Garr. On the first question, how districts design their Title I, what they do, is envisioned at least until it came to a point of them being not meeting adequate yearly progress for X number of years. They would continue to have that control to be able to design those programs, how best to address the needs of the kids in their particular school or grade level, however they had that. And we have a lot of different models around the state. The question that came up with what happens when they continue not to meet adequate yearly progress and they have to submit for approval, and what would that approval look like? That's one of those regulatory or statutory changes that may be necessary. We're still talking to our attorneys, and we'll be talking with you some more on detail about whether or not current statute gives us that that authority to do that approval. The NCLB, No Child Left Behind, envisions that state departments or state entities would be able to, if that program was not making the kind of changes, the No Child Left Behind envisions that the state entity would be able to say to that district, don't do that practice, it's not working, try something else. How we'd get to there and what that would look like is a number of years away, so we've got some time, very critical public debate. On the second question about the resources of money and where the money would come from, one of the things that we've heard as you listen to the various federal speakers, as we were listening, as I think you'll hear on Thursday, is you'll hear mention made of the money that's available for this program or that program. The reason that we gave you that detailed breakout is that you'll see in some cases the money for this new initiative was gained by taking it away from another initiative. One of the examples would be in the area of professional development. There's been some additional dollars freed up for some areas of professional development. Those were funds that were taken from the class size reduction grant. Districts could still use the money for class size reduction, but obviously if you spend the dollar on class size reduction, you don't have it to spend it on professional development. In that case, it was kind of a wash from one hand to the other, and then telling the recipient, the district, but you can still use that money for this practice if you want. There is, when all is said and done, about $27 million new dollars. Whether or not those $27 million will continue for future years is, as any of us have been watching the federal budget issues, and as you watch your own budget issues, the difference between authorization and actually appropriation, getting the dollars, is a political process, and I would not want to venture. Obviously, we would be strongly requesting that they fund that which they're asking us to do. It's a similarity to the IDEA, to the Spec Ed Act, the Special Education Act, for those of you that are just getting into this area, is another place where there are specific federal requirements on how we develop and deliver services for children with special needs, children with disabilities. And that was originally envisioned to fund about 40% of the costs. It has never come close to funding 40% of the costs. So that as this bill goes forward, there are those in the Congress that are very concerned that this could end up with some very good goals that end up being underfunded or that have to be funded through something else. The Secretary of Education, final point, the Secretary of Education sent an email or a memo. I don't have a copy of it with me, so I apologize for making reference without being able to cite it, but sent word to us that he was becoming alarmed at hearing that a number of states were going to be looking at using the new dollars to supplant, use them in substitution for ongoing programs. And he was saying out to the commissioners, to the state commissioners, I don't want to see that happening. So I think people are aware of this sort of tension. Dollars are tight.
I think you're just getting an idea of how detailed this is and how one question takes a long time to answer. The school administrators had a meeting 2 weeks ago maybe in Anchorage. It was a three-day meeting, and they came away with not all their questions answered because so many more pop up in your mind. So we only have an hour and a half, and so this is really for us to just to get it in our heads. We'll have lots of time to answer questions lately, and especially the detailed ones. So Representative Sitna, you were next, but if you, how detailed is this going to be?
Well, and I guess, of course, one of the first things I wrote down was, what flexibility do we have? And really where that comes from is I've been working with a group developing career ladder programs for our schools. And we've been wondering whether there'd even be time to have anything like that in our schools. And yet in our area, that's a real key concern, is getting kids ready for work. How much latitude are we going to have with this? And is this too general, and is this the wrong time to ask it?
Through the chair, the question of is it flexible enough is going to be a judgment call. I think as we go through and we highlight for you the areas that we've got concern, and especially I would draw your attention to the discussion point that the secretary, that the commissioner shared with the Secretary of Education, laying out one of our plans was this whole piece of applicational ed. We got very concerned. We had heard in this summer, early fall, that there was some thinking by the feds to change money from vocational career education to this piece. And a lot of the advocates for vocational career ed really got on board pretty quickly and got that piece changed. The good news is there are a lot of people that are really following this thing very closely and have those same concerns. It would again be a question, not to put it off, but to let the Kevin Meyer representing to the Federals, that would be a question that, I mean, that's a question that we constantly ask him, and it's a question I would invite you to ask him. I suspect that he would say that there's nothing counter high standards for all kids. That should not be at the expense of vocational, and vocational should not be at the expense of high standard, and vice versa. But as all of you know, working with schools, it's the detail that gets us.
Let the record show that Representative Stevens has just joined us, and Ed, I think I'll let you proceed.
Thank you. Going back to number 10, page 10, the timeline, I just want to give you a sense about the fast track that we're under. We have an accountability work plan due January 31st. Mark Leal, our Director of Assessment, has been heading that one up. We'll then have a peer review from February to April, and that's a time when we'll be involved in, the feds would not call it negotiations, but we'd be involved in discussions with them about how to make this work in the detail for us. That's a very critical time for us. At that same time, we'll be bringing forth some of our statutory revisions and some of our first set of regulations to the State Board and to you all. That'll be happening in the next little bit, and at that point, we'll really want to have you ask those sort of detailed pieces. Again, I'm just... Those of you that remember from last year, I could chew up your hour and a half talking about any one of these pieces, so I'm trying to be good. But that's where we'll be bringing those in, because we will need to get those put in place. We'll have final plan approved by May 1st. That timeline has moved a bunch in the past. That's the timeline they've given us now. Originally, we were supposed to have had our entire plan, our final plan, by January. And so the feds have been exercising some flexibility already, though they don't like to say that. They have been, and hopefully they'll continue. We envision that this revision process will continue through June into the next fall. But we do have to have this stuff in place 2003. It's a very short timeline for a bill this size. The bill is on page 11. The No Child Left Behind accountability system is based on assessments in reading, language arts, and mathematics. So it is focused, fits with us. We were right ahead. That didn't catch us by surprise. It does set the goals of, it does set the goal of all students proficient in 12 years, as Representative Gatto pointed out. That is an area that some people have said is problematic for some. It does that by various subgroups, and failure to not make adequate early progress in any one of those categories would cause a school to be deemed not to make adequate early progress. It is a question that we'll come back to a couple times in my presentation with you. It's multiple indicators, but unlike what you would generally think of with multiple indicators, if you have 53 of these, there'd be 53 to 54, there'd be 54 indicators for a school, and if you were successful in 53 of those and you missed it in one, by these rules, you miss it. It would not be, you could not say the overwhelming evidence, we've made it 53 out of 54. If you miss it in one, you miss it. And so one of the management problems we have, the public relation problems we have, is we think there's something really different, substantially different, about a school that's overall doing well and has this one targeted spot, that to use the same language and identifier for that as a school that is across the board having difficulty is problematic. At the same token, as you'll see when I get a little bit further, a key difference with ours is that we look at the growth that kids can make. And so if here's the bar, we think there's a real difference. If we've got kids that are making progress towards there, we think that that's really different from a school that's just flatlining. And if the only switch that matters is, are you over or under, and this sort of progress doesn't get reflected, we think that's an issue. But those are... And then the 95% participation rate, the graduation rate for secondary schools and other indicators for elementary schools. We're still dealing with the elementary indicators. If you take a look on page 12, this is one that could encompass a bunch of questions, but I would ask that you hold these questions until we have Eric Mattson come up, and we've got some slides that go a little bit more detail with this later on. But basically, this looks at a multi-step so that just failing 1 year doesn't do it, but it's when you fail for 2 years, and then each subsequent year begins to look and see if you make progress. One of the areas that we're looking at is the idea that we're thinking it ought to be that if you've got a population and it fails in this area, but the next year you've worked and you've corrected that population and that achievement, and you have a problem pop up in someplace else, that that should be seen as a new issue, and so now you address that one. There's a common senseness to that. There's an educational soundness issue to that that I think I could make. It's not clear. There are some in the department that are saying it doesn't matter whether it's the same group or different groups, the same year or different years. And so that is an area that we're working with. But the idea being that it takes 2 years and then 3 years and then 4 years. And each year that you fail to make out of yearly progress, the sanctions or the restrictions get greater. The point that I forget which member made, Representative Garrow had made, was that at some point the school could be required to seek approval for its plan before it could implement it, seek approval from the state. That's generally not really happened before. If you look on page 13, that happens as we move into corrective action in the fourth year. There are specific steps. They must take one of those steps. And we do kind of joke around this one. In our state, we have a real problem with staff turnover in some of our schools, and that the feds are indicating that one of the solutions is simply replace staff when we think that's been a problem. Is an example of the kind of, we think we agree with the intent, but we think the prescribed solutions might not be all that we might want to go for. And again, Eric can speak to that. At page 14, when you move to alternative governance, we do think that this is where they're going to be requiring some formal sort of approval from us. And there's a piece here that you can begin to get a little bit to the question that Representative Kapsner raised before. One of their prescribed is to reopen as a public charter school. That's really not the way we envision charter schools opening now. That's not the avenue that we've envisioned in our current legislation about charter schools, that you get to go for a charter school because you've got a six-year documented history of failure to make AYP. So there are just some pieces that need to be worked out, and it's something that we've been talking about, but I wanted to give you an overview of some of the, it's hard not to get into the bill without talking about some of the detail, because the bill by its nature gets into the detail, and it's in those details that some of the problems begin to come up. So on page 15, it's an overview. It's some of the types of stuff that we've been doing to try to talk with the feds about the flexibility, and again, it's pieces to prep you now, not so much NCLB 101, but to prep you for your conversations on Thursday. We have been talking with the feds. Mark Leal was invited to a technical committee to review the work by the five states that have been approved. So we've been glomming over their plans, looking at what they've done, seeing what kind of flexibility there actually is there. I was named to an adequate early progress group to meet in Washington to make recommendations to the Department of Education. I think it was kind of interesting. We had gone through the bill, that brain trust, and we had come up with some recommendations. It was very disheartening. That was in October. The election happened in November, and towards the end of November, we were hearing back that our recommendations for flexibility were not being addressed. It made some of us was a frustrating, I think, is a safe way to put it. But those pieces are still out there, and it was nice to see that some of those pieces, again, while the talk was still very hardcore, we did see that some of the proposals that were raised in that brain trust meeting did show up in some of the plans that were approved. And so it appears that there is indeed some avenues for some leeway as they're developing. Final regulations were published in November. Approved plans, there are five that have been approved. They are on the web, so you can take a look at them. Mark's done an excellent job working with the school designator committee and his tech review committee at trying to take apart those and figure out how they might work for us. I'm going to open for questions again after this slide. This just talks about the state challenge. the legislature approved a implementation of our designator system. We have a designator committee. The designator committee's been talking about a system that would work for Alaska. It's been developed by Alaskans from various roles and places in the state. The challenge that we've got to face basically is this NCLB or Alaska system, and the commissioner has been very clear in her direction as we unfold.
I'm sorry, I need to brief it. Bonnie's having technical.